From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on Sunday night when the United Auto Workers announced that 49,000 union members at 55 General Motors plants across the country were going on strike. Talks on a new contract had fallen apart and the union was sending a strong message. In Rochester, that means 870 striking members. Their leaders call this a case of corporate greed. President Dan Maloney says that the workers bake the economic pie and the executives essentially want to eat all of it. They're just looking for fairness. The last time Rochester UAW workers went on strike of this kind of a magnitude, we're talking 1970, when more than 6,000 local workers picketed. In 1998, there was a layoff-related strike. And the bottom line is that while contract negotiations are always contentious, strikes are rare. We reached out to GM, asking them to join the conversation this afternoon. They declined. They offered a very short statement, which I will read coming up. This hour, we sit down with striking members to better understand why they are striking and what they want next. Our guests this hour include Dan Maloney, who's a machine repair specialist and the president of UAW Local 1097. Dan, welcome back to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Chris Brancato is here. Chris is an electrician and recording secretary for UAW Local 1097. Chris, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And Jocelyn James is a production worker and a trustee for UAW Local 1097. Welcome, Jocelyn.
Thank you very much.
So we're going to start with this GM statement here, because, again, my goal this hour, as always, was to bring people from all sides together to sit down and see if we can find some common ground. And GM told us they appreciated the offer, but they are not doing interviews on the subject right now. Here is this statement. And you might have seen it already in the news. They're referring to this one. They write, quote, "Negotiations have resumed. Our goal remains to reach an agreement that builds a stronger future for our employees and our business," end quote. So that's the statement from GM. And Dan says they're saying there they just want what's good for everybody. They want what's good for you, the workers, for the company, for the shareholders, for everything. What do you make of that?
Yeah, we can't believe what they've done, right? They just closed Lordstown in Northeast Ohio. The Chevy Cruze was ending its run. They claim it wasn't selling the way they wanted it. They weren't moving enough vehicles. They closed that plant. They could have filled in with a new product. The Chevy Blazer would have been a great pick, but instead they chose to build a new factory in Mexico and build the Chevy Blazer down there. That's a kind of example of what we're dealing with. So they're saying one thing, doing the opposite. The American taxpayer bailed out General Motors 10 years ago. And the return on our investment was to be jobs, long-term security, investments in U.S. plants. And again, those corporate folks that make those decisions, they decided to expand in China and Mexico, turn their back on the American taxpayer, biting the hand that feeds them.
Let me hit the Mexico point just briefly there, because if I'm running a company, and I'm being totally hypothetical, it doesn't have to be GM here, and I've got an opportunity to keep operations going and to strengthen operations in, where'd you say, Lordstown, Ohio?
Correct.
Okay. Or Rochester, New York, or pick any sort of, especially sort of mid-size American market. And I can do that for X. Or for Y, I can do the same thing in Mexico, and Y is significantly less to my bottom line. Mm-hmm. Do I have an obligation to shareholders to take that second opportunity, even if it means jobs in Mexico, not Ohio?
So the shareholder in this case, again, is the American taxpayer and the workers. We took a loss when it was bad management. They had more resources than some nations, right, 20, 30 years ago, General Motors. They ran the brain trust, the executives, this big operation into the ground. It was the sacrifice of the workers. They stole our pension. We went into concession bargaining through bankruptcies, 30% pay cut, and then the ultimate slap, the American taxpayer. They came with hat in hand. We bailed them out. They're not the smartest. They're not the brightest. They do not make the best moves. They are very unpatriotic. It's greed, corporate greed, run amok. And eventually, and they're doing an end around on the laws of this land. They said at one time we could come into work for free when we were Delphi, not take a dime, and we couldn't compete with China, right? Because we have regulations, because they're moral, because we don't want to just dump into rivers and streams, right? That's a cost of doing business, but we're a sovereign nation that made those decisions together. Those are the laws we put in place. All these large corporations do an end around on the laws of the land by going to Asia.
Okay, so just to make sure I understand.
To abuse workers.
Yeah, no, just to make sure I understand the point, because I understand workers in different countries, there are different labor standards, there's different environmental standards, there's different regulatory standards. Are you saying that, yes, GM could save the money on the bottom line by sending those jobs to Mexico, but it is not a moral thing to do?
It's not moral, it's not ethical, and it's not patriotic in any regards. And it's bad for our community. Those 870 workers, majority of them are right here in the city of Rochester. For every one auto worker, there's seven other people in the supply stream, very deep supply stream here, right? So Klein Steel, Lexington Screw Machine, Petz and Raybould Machine Builders. We put so many people to work in this community, and we're hurting, right, in the wake of that Kodak bankruptcy, the downsizing of Xerox and Bausch and Lomb. Because corporate greed, this is being played out over and over again.
So in a moment, I want to get Chris and Jocelyn's perspective here. But Dan, before the hour began, we talked a little bit about a possible duration and what you expect to happen here. Let's talk a little bit about that. You're several days in here. Mm-hmm. We've seen strikes go 1-2 months in length in the past. What do you think is the likely outcome at this point?
Look, I hate to even, I think they're pretty well dug in. I know the UAW put the line in the sand. We're done. We had enough of concession bargaining. We saw what it gets you. The analogy being the schoolyard bully. He's going to come take your lunch every day until you decide to fight back. You might lose. You might lose that fight. But that bully's going to go pick on somebody else the next day, and you get to eat your lunch. That's where we're at with GM. So we'll last one day longer, one day stronger. That's what we like to say. We're in this to win it. We're in it for the long haul, whatever it takes.
Even if that is months.
Absolutely. We walked the picket line, those of us in this room here at the Mott's plant out on 104, there was over a 100-day strike. They won the issue.
Do you think that's what's likely to happen this time, Dan?
I would like to think that, there's smarter people than me in the room in Detroit. General Motors losing $100 million a day, approximately, again, depending on what report you read. 10-day strike is $1 billion. I don't think it's good for a shareholder, right? So they should come to their senses. I don't think our demands are going to cost as much as a lengthy strike. They should do the right thing, again, for the ethical, moral, patriotic reasons, and they owe us. We're the stakeholders in this company. We bailed them out.
Jocelyn, how do you feel about the decision to strike right now? How strongly do you feel like it was the right call? Because during a strike, the idea is that both sides are hurting, and the question is, how long can one side last? How do you feel as a worker, and how do you feel about that decision this time?
I feel extremely, extremely confident in doing this strike. It's very personable, and it means a lot to our community, the workers that are there. Everyone, this is not just for us, but it's for the middle class, and we're all trying to make fair wages, better health care, and we need this. This is very serious for us, and I think that this is the best decision that we could have made.
Do you sense that workers that you've talked to, I mean, I don't know that you've talked to all 870, but you've talked to a lot of your colleagues, your friends.
Yes.
Is it pretty unified?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Everyone are 100% on board with this.
Listeners, you want to call the program and share your thoughts as we see this. This is a significant strike in our community. And to Dan's point, it's 870 workers, but there are ripple effects and other impacts that go throughout our community and the local economy. You can call toll-free, 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255. It's 263-WXXI here in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections@WXXI.org. Chris Brancato is an electrician who's been there 13 years. How strongly did you feel about this decision to strike?
I was definitely on board with the strike. The last two contracts that we've had, we've given concessions. The idea was we're going to live to fight another day. We've been doing what management has been telling us to do the right things, to get more work in our plant. And we got the big slap in our face last year when they said the next generation fuel system isn't going to be in Rochester. And not only did the union folks, the union workers, get the slap in the face, but even our engineering staff, our local management, they got the slap in the face as well. They can't speak out and talk about that because they don't have the union protections that we have. But they're on board with us 100%. When we're on that strike line, you know, they can't walk out and carry signs with us, but there's a lot of them that, you know, on the sly, when they're going in, they're giving us the thumbs up, and, you know, as they're driving in the plant, and they're telling us, hey, we hope you get it, you know, because they know they're in it with us. I mean, if we don't get work in our plant, it's going to hurt a lot of people. It's going to hurt, obviously, all of us in the plant, but it's also going to hurt our communities that rely on the work. I mean, we have, you know, the mom and pop shops where we go to eat lunch every day. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that they depend on us.
What are you doing personally to deal with the fact that you're on strike now, and this is, everyone's going to feel it?
What I'm doing is I'm going without sleep. From Sunday afternoon, I'm a third shift worker, but normally I, you know, try and get a little bit of sleep before I go into work Sunday. Sunday afternoon, I got the call from Dan, all of our local leadership. We met at the union hall. We started putting strike signs together, getting our plans together, and, you know, kind of finalizing because we weren't sure what's going on. And then I went from doing that. I went home, got in my uniform, got my cup of coffee, my thermos, went to work, and waited to decide whether the international UAW was going to call the strike at midnight or not. They called the strike at midnight. I walked off the line and moved my truck off the company property because they wanted all of our vehicles gone. Walked back, got my picket sign, and started walking in front of that plant. I didn't leave until, oh, I can't remember what time it was in the morning. It was pretty late in the morning. Day shift was already in. We were making sure that we got all the workers to the union hall so they knew what was going on. It's kind of hard, and it was real terrible. I had different people I worked with for a lot of years wanting to know whether we're going on strike, not going on strike, and you can't say anything because then management knows, and it's, you know, and even ourselves, we really didn't know for sure if it was going to happen or not. And
does it scare you for what you've got to provide for people in your life and for yourself?
It doesn't scare me because, you know, we got to fight this fight someday. I mean, I can't just, you can't just go sit in a corner and wait for somebody else to come do it for you. I mean, I'm a skilled tradesman. What we do is we fix things. We don't just sit back and call somebody. You know, that's my job. It's been my job since I was a teenager in high school. I was working skilled trades. So I've always done that, is I fix things. I don't run from the problem. I'm the guy that fixes things. So when this come up, I'm the guy. I mean, it's not just me, but I'm not going to run away. I've got the support, and it helps a lot more when we're all out there. You know,
Absolutely.
I'm getting tired. Last night, I was tired. I mean, I really was tired. Then Jocelyn shows up, starts, you know, chanting the song, singing, and it gives you that energy. The workers are kind of, you know, and it kind of surprises me too. Some of the workers that I thought, you know, might not be that strong. You don't know how strong somebody is till you put them in the situation, and they'll surprise you. I mean, we had some folks that, you know, I don't know, you know, how to say it, but if I was a betting man, you know, I wouldn't have thought that they would have been with us, and they surprised me how strong they are with us. I mean, it's, you know, and when you get tired, I mean, we're out there, you know, I'm out there all night, and 3 o'clock in the morning, you're getting a little sleepy. There's not too many cars driving up and down Lexington Avenue. And then you'll get some guy that'll drive by and just start beeping his horn and yelling out the window to us, yeah, we're with you, we got your back. And, you know, and it's not always about the car they're driving. I mean, you know, everyone was laughing because,
although
you got people,
they should be General Motors cars.
I got you. It's but you got folks in, you know, Toyota, Honda. I mean, it's, you know, it's not just about the vehicle. It's about the jobs, and everybody feels the strain. It doesn't matter what job you have. You know, I looked at the breakdown. They have Mary Barra, the CEO of General Motors. They had a thing, they broke her down. Her hourly rate is $11,400. And she's saying that our folks that make $15, $42, make too much. I mean, it just, it's mind-boggling. You know, I don't understand. You know, it's you know, and I mean, we were also talking with how much money this has cost them. They could have paid everybody's health care for a year. You know, but
absolutely.
And I think the company's posturing. They're trying to scare us, and if we don't scare that easy, I mean, we've been getting beaten up on a daily basis. It's been going on for years. I mean, a situation I talked about with our international rep the other day, we have a setup guy. He's got probably around 20 years, give or take. He's been doing his job. He's a hardworking man. He drives all the way down from the southern tier to come to work to every day because it's a good job, you know, and he does the right thing. If we need help, sometimes we need the setup folks to run a machine. He's, you know, instead of telling us, oh, it's break time, I got to go, he's like, look, okay, I'll give you a hand, and he'll stay with us. He always does the right thing. And then the one day he wants to see his granddaughter get on the school bus for the very first time. That only happens once. That's not something that you're ever going to see again. And we have a general supervisor that decides, you know what, force him over an hour, because contractually we can be forced over an hour of our shift to teach him a lesson. Now, I don't know what lesson he's going to be taught other than, you know.
He missed out on that
opportunity. I'm trying to use a word not to, you know.
He's biting his tongue here.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, the only lesson he was taught was that he is undervalued and he doesn't matter. He's not a person. And that's you know, and the problem we have is when we have folks in leadership that have no real life experience, they've never lost a parent, they've never had a child, they've never ever gone through hardship. This has been their first job out of college, and they're given the keys to the car and they don't know how to drive. It's real hard for some of the folks that have been there a long time, you know.
Well, let me ask Jocelyn the same thing before I get some community feedback, because I see the phone ringing. We've got some comments from the from listeners to read. And listeners, it's 844-295-TALK if you want to call the program as we talk about the UAW strike, 870 local workers striking from the GM plant here. You can call the program. It's 844-295-8255. Jocelyn, how are you dealing with being on strike personally? Again, I know you supported it, but it impacts everybody in different ways. How are you handling it?
Personally, I'm very motivated at this point, and I'm trying to help motivate others who may be feeling some type of way. I've been out there since we've started on all three shifts, trying to help keep everybody alert. And I'm running on about 2 hours of sleep also. It's tiring, but it's worth it. We all need to stick together. I believe that, you know, this is what we have to do in order for us to get what we need. And if we don't, where are we going from here?
How's it going to impact you and your family?
I have some things going on in my home, and I have some issues going on. Healthcare is a major, major issue for me right now. And we found out the other night that the healthcare was shut down. So I had an appointment, actually, that I had to go to, and I called and rearranged, postponed it, and tried to reschedule for a later date. We don't know how long this is going to last. So, you know, but I'm willing to be out here to do what I need to do. And if I just have to go, I'll have to go. But I'm not stepping back. I'm not standing down. I'm going to ride this out until the end. It's going to hurt a little bit. It may hurt a lot, but I'm going to ride it till the wheels fall off.
Amen.
Oh, yeah, you're on the winning side.
Absolutely.
Let me get a phone call from Don in East Rochester first. Go ahead, Don.
Good afternoon. I welcome you people to this program, and I support you in the utmost. I was reading in the New York Times this morning that 63% of the American people support unions. in general, and that's 10% more than it was 10 years ago, that 54% of the American people said they would join a union if they could. I support you 100%. Could you elaborate a little bit on the two-tiered system? I think that is the greatest danger to the union, to the workers. I can see, you know, for every permanent high-paid employee retires, they get replaced by a temporary worker who's making much less. Pretty soon you don't have any workers that are making the high wages, and you have just temporary workers. That I would think that would be a major issue, if you could comment on that. Also, could you explain how the community can support you? Can we come down to your picket line and walk your picket line and help you and support you?
We lost Don there, but Don, thank you for that. And the question from Don is one that others have already asked, which is, if you're not part of UAW, what can you do to support if you want to?
So we're manning those strike lines on Lexington Avenue and driving Park Avenue 24/7 around the clock until this issue is resolved. And we greatly appreciate the community support. Come on down. To Jocelyn's point, keep our spirits up. This fight is for the community. This fight is for America. So I believe Chris said it, you're out there 3 in the morning, these cars drive by honking their horn, they pull up with a Dunkin' Donuts coffee, bin for the crew, they come by with a pizza. We greatly appreciate all the community support and keeping the pressure on corporate greed, because that is our fight. The other part of it was the two-tier and temporary workers. We had workers in our plant, and it was a result of the bankruptcy. We had to eat this temporary language to take the government cheese, if you will. And we never wanted it. We never negotiated in good faith for it. But the company is using it to their full advantage. We've had people in our plant working on a line next to us, making a lot less pay, with no vacation, lesser benefit package, because they're temporary. So that's one of the big issues on the table in Detroit right now. We're not going to settle until we straighten out the temporary language. Two-tier is another issue. In our plant, we're a second tier to General Motors, even though they rolled us back in. They needed the parts. They have to have what we build. And by the way, we never miss a shipment, and we're the highest quality fuel system in the world right out of Rochester, New York. And GM needed us, but they're treating us like redheaded stepchildren, for lack of a better term. And it's another issue on the table. Bring us up to full wage and benefits. And it's a union saying, an injury to one is an injury to all. And again, that's one of the things we're fighting for: good wages, building our strong community.
Assemblyman Mark Johns is on the phone next. Let's go ahead and take his call. And Assemblyman, thanks for taking the time. Go ahead.
Yeah, hey, guys. Hey, Dan. How you doing?
All right, Assemblyman. Thanks for calling in.
Nice to see you, Mark.
Hey, good to say. Listen, I just wanted to mention something. I don't know. Can you hear me okay? I'm on a cell phone.
I think it's good enough, Mark. Go ahead.
Good enough, huh? I'll tell you what, and the thing I wanted to say, and I've talked with Dan and other people, you know, as Americans, we have a choice. We're a pro-choice country. We can buy foreign cars. We can buy American cars. I choose to buy an American car. Dan will tell you the story about what good luck I've had with my General Motors cars. But the fact is that, you know, I always say, if you want to play a game of Mission Impossible, go down to Albany and see if you can find any politicians driving American cars. But come election time, I'm with the union workers. We love the union workers. You know what? This is what I've told Dan before and other people. When you buy American, you keep the money in this country. American workers and American corporations pay taxes that is going to someday, if I live long enough, pay my Social Security. You know, the Germans aren't going to pay your Social Security or your Medicare. Neither are the Japanese or the Koreans. So the idea that, I might save $2,000 or $3,000 and buy another car, well, in the long run, two Social Security checks is going to be the difference right there, right?
Well, Mark, before I let you go, though, I mean, I appreciate the point you're making. Do you agree with the guests who are saying that when GM decides to move a plant from Ohio to Mexico, that it is an act of corporate greed to do that? Do you agree with that, Assemblyman?
Well, look, corporations are in the business of making a profit. I blame the World Trade Deal. And Trump, I guess, is trying to do something, however inept he might be. But we were sold out. The World Trade Organization was voted on was voted for by 75% of both parties. And now we got this problem with China. Look, we got Chevys being made in China. We got Buick being made in South Korea. We have jobs that are being funneled out of the country legally. So if you allow this World Trade Organization, TPP, anything else, to allow jobs to be exited because of an unbalanced or unlevel playing field, I'm saying let the American workers fight with a level playing field, and I think Dan Maloney and everybody else will be able to compete on a level basis, and we'll wind up on top.
Okay, but one more question then. The question then is how, because if you have other countries that have lower standards for wages, environmental regulations, and more, and trade deals or not, those are the standards. And GM says, look, in order for us to keep 40 plants in this country, we're going to move 10 plants to Mexico because we've got to cut costs somewhere. Do you think, Mark, that GM is making a fair point, or do you think that the union is pointing out is correct in their analysis?
You know, when the speed limit is 75, people will drive 75. I'm saying if you don't like the rules, and I don't, I was against the World Trade deal back in the 90s. And you have a situation where in that World Trade Organization, the World Trade deal, there is no women's rights, no children's rights, no environmental rights or environmental laws whatsoever. You can pay people $1 or $2 an hour for skilled labor in other countries. Of course, that's where the jobs are going to go. What I'm suggesting is renegotiate this ridiculous WTO, which was opposed not only by union environmentalists, Pat Buchanan, Ralph Nader, Ross Perot. The fact is it was a race to the bottom. We need to go back and negotiate it. So let's have a minimum wage. It may not be $10 an hour, but how about worldwide minimum wage for at least $5 an hour and have a level playing field? I'm a Buffalo Bills fan, but when they play the New York Giants, they have 11 guys on the field. I don't want to see the Bills playing with 10 people. Or nine. I'm saying let's have a level playing field, and I think the American workers and the union workers will do just fine.
Mark, as always, thank you for the phone call. Thanks for taking the time. That's Assemblyman Mark Johns, who didn't point out, by the way, that the Bills played against Eli Manning, which is like playing 11 on 10. So, but setting that aside, Dan, as the biggest Bills fan in the room here, and a happy guy in that regard, but looking at internationally, he's saying that we ought to renegotiate these deals, and that they have not helped workers at all. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. It's just these giant corporations abusing workers elsewhere that they can't do here by law. They're doing an end around, right? So really, they're evading our sovereign law of the land here. And they say, well, it's China. We can't tell them. It's Korea. We can't tell them what to do in their own country. Yeah, but you can tell them what to bring in our borders. If it wasn't made environmentally friendly, if it wasn't made with good labor laws, you know, women's rights standards in those countries, I don't want it here. Tariff, I can't use the word I want to use, but put tariffs in place to stop stuff coming in that is evading, circumventing our laws, right? And it's immoral and unethical, and I am so tired of it. I think it was Jack Walsh. Is he the guy that wrote all those books about the race to the bottom economics? It's all about the shareholder. No, it isn't. Right, we have a higher moral standard here in the U.S., and we also ought to be expanding American democracy, not expanding communism in China because of the few rich folks at the top and what they're doing. It's all about this economic disparity now that's creating problems. I think the whole economy is on shaky ground right now because of it. Two-thirds of GDP is consumer spending. The consumer is the worker. The worker has been squeezed for so long over a period of decades, there's not enough money to pump back into the economy. You give a worker a dollar raise, they spend it. When they spend it, that's an upper economic spiral, right? Folks are going to start building other plants for the consumer goods they're buying. Those restaurants are going to hire. You're going to increase the tax base. It's going to pay for cops, firefighters, better street lighting and filling potholes and plowing and garbage pickup and teachers, all the things that expanding tax base does, all that good, if you give the worker a raise, just a fair share of the pie we bake. That's all we're asking for. It's outrageous, the greed going on.
It's equity of sacrifice, too. I mean, it's you have two different classes. like the gentleman, I think his name was Doug, said on the radio that when we have people that retire, then we have they're hiring temporary people to replace them. What we have now is we don't have people retiring because they've gotten rid of pensions. So a lot of the folks, tradesmen that hired in with me a little over 13 years ago, they reached the age of 65, 67, 70. They have to work a lot longer now because they don't have health care. They don't have post-retirement health care, a lot of the other things we have. And then they finally think they have enough money in their 401ks or from their previous jobs and this job that they think they can leave. General Motors doesn't even consider them a retiree. They consider them a scheduled quit. That is the most offensive thing to somebody that's worked for years and years and years because they don't have a pension. They're still retiring, but they don't even mark them down as a retiree. They mark them down as a scheduled quit, and they no longer get the discount on a General Motors vehicle, like a friends and family that you would traditionally get. They don't get that. So now you have folks that really are taking a burn, and they're looking to Ford Motor Company because Ford, they're a much better actor in this. They're starting to not put the things that they were going to put in Mexico. They're holding back and saying, you know what? We're going to put it in the U.S. It's not about what's legal or not legal in the trade world. It's not about that. It's about doing the right thing. The right thing doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, just because something's legal doesn't mean it's the right thing to do. You know, you talk about the speed limit. If the speed limit's 75, everybody's going to go 75. They're going to go 75, but guess what? If it's a rainy, snowy day, you're not going to go 75. Just because it's legal, you're not going to do it. You're going to slow down, do the right thing, and go 60 or 55. And that's what these companies need to do. They need to slow down, take a look at it, and do the right thing. When people are starting to go to the Nissan, the Volkswagen, some of these other cars that they're driving, what they tell us, we say, hey, why are you driving this car, that car? Oh, it's made in the USA. They throw that up in your face. And it's like they don't fully understand that not every single one of them is made in the USA, but just knowing that there's a Nissan plant, they're like, it's USA. They don't realize that Nissan plant, the majority of the workers are temporary. They have no health care. And
it's final assembly only. The supply chain runs through Asia.
I don't want to make your ears bleed with it, but.
Well, let's do this. Let's take our only break of the hour, and we've got a flood of feedback, and we're going to keep working through that feedback as we go throughout the hour. We've got three members of UAW Local 1097, including the local president, Dan Maloney. They have a combined 61 years of experience at UAW, and now with GM, 55 GM plants, 49,000 union members across the country have been striking since Sunday night. So we're in day three, and they tell us it could go 4 days, it could go 4 months, and they have dug in because they feel like they have conceded enough, and the time is now to make this stand in this form of this national strike. So 870 members striking in Rochester. You might see them out on the picket line, and they're asking for your support. We did reach out to GM, and they declined to participate in this conversation. They sent us this statement, and again, it's two sentences. I'll read it now. It's, quote, negotiations have resumed. Our goal remains to reach an agreement that builds a stronger future for our employees and our business. Let's get more of your feedback on the other side of this break. Coming up in our second hour, schools across the country continue to assign reading lists that contain mostly white authors with white protagonists, and a movement has been launched to change that. You might have seen the hashtags 1000 Black Girl Books and We Need Diverse Books. Some of the founders of the movement are coming to Rochester next week. We're talking to them about their efforts and also what's happening locally next hour on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. So let me do this. Let me read a comment from a listener, and then I'll take a phone call that, you know, I don't know that they're on GM's side, but they're offering a little bit of pushback. So let me just go ahead and read. The first is an email that reads the following. Your guests have correctly identified the reasons for the GM bankruptcy in 2008. GM executives ran the company into the ground. I'm very supportive of the right to collective bargaining, and I hope the union can achieve its goals while not undermining the progress GM has made since the bankruptcy. That said, it's important to point out that the union contract negotiated by former GM CEO Bob Stemple in the early 90s was a contributor to GM's bankruptcy because it precluded the company from doing what it is doing now, closing factories to lower costs, moving production to other countries, and keeping the company cost competitive. It's popular to cite corporate greed as a root cause of society's ills, but if current management did not take the decisions they are taking now, GM will be back in bankruptcy court sometime in the future.
I mean, that's just ridiculous. I mean, I sit there, I'm a tradesman. They outsourced, they had three clocks they needed put in a training center. $11,000 they paid an outside contractor to come in and put in three clocks that my UAW brothers could have done it for about $500. And, you know, and I can go through different other scenarios. Our snow plowing, they pay three times as much to have outsiders snow plow because it's easier to manage, because all they have to do is pick up a phone and make a phone call. That's easier to manage, three times as much money. But my problem is your job is to be a manager. So if you're not going to manage, you know, how do you justify spending three times as much money when it can be done cheaper with the people we have? We've got a lot of our folks that are, I mean, tradesmen, they're willing and ready to do this work. And the company, they don't want us to do it. They purposely outsource stuff, and they do a lot of times they do it just as it's almost like a divorcing husband and wife that just do things to get back at the other one. It has nothing to do with being, you know, taking care of the kids. And
and Mary Barra's salary over $20 million. Yeah. She wins the lottery every year. She is an employee. She is not Henry Ford. She is not Thomas Edison. She didn't invent the better mousetrap. Yeah. She is an employee of General Motors, just like we are. And when we see these bad decisions, but we have no say in it, that's what's really wrong here. Because we, on a local level, as Chris is speaking to, we could save tens of thousands of dollars a year. Amplify that through the 55 plants, and we could save hundreds of millions of dollars a year if workers truly had a say in what we're doing, rather than just me, Tarzan, you, Jane, taking orders kind of thing. So that's why we're at the impasse at the bargaining table, and we are going to have our voices heard.
And they don't want to think outside the box. I mean, I worked at Eastman Kodak for a lot of years, and I'll tell you what, they had teams over there, and they really were teams. They didn't have all the supervisor structure that we have at our plant right now. They streamlined it. We had a second shift, the whole entire second shift, third shift. There was not a single supervisor in the building. We took care of all of our own vacations, everything. We had tradesmen and we had production folks. Everybody knows their job. They do their job. When we come in on a weekend, there's been situations where we're short bosses. Everybody does their job. We don't, you know, the overhead that they can really go and get at that is a little bit too much is some of the supervision. We have folks with engineering degrees. Instead of working on engineering solutions to some of our production problems, they have them walking around with a clipboard, being a babysitter for folks that really don't need babysitting.
So you trying to justify their existence.
Yeah, yeah.
You think the glut is at the top is what you're saying?
Correct.
Oh, I guarantee, yeah.
So let me get another phone call. This is John in Rochester. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Evan. Yeah, I got to let you guys and gals know that my wife and I, over a period of 45 years, we've probably purchased 15 to 20 GM cars because
we felt that
was the key to keeping America, making America great again, I guess. And the other comment I wanted to make is Trump, I think, is the only president, Republican or Democrat, in my lifetime that has fought against China's share of this production market, Mexico, etc. Trump really is trying to battle these countries for a fairer shake, and I think he should be thanked for that. The third comment I wanted to make, my only concern about the strike is this. Back in 2010, GM was bailed out. The bondholders, I think, lost $20 billion, and then the taxpayers paid I've heard estimates anywhere from $20 to $40 billion that were not reimbursed when the stock was sold. In any event, my concern is if GM doesn't make these tough decisions now, are we going to face another taxpayer bailout in the near future?
John, thank you. That is exactly the comment from the previous emailer, Dan Maloney, which is that, look, GM may have some top-heavy executive salaries, and a lot of American companies do, but at the same time, if the choice is 50 plants, 40 in this country and 10 in China and Mexico, or no plants in this country and you go out of business, that's what John, who just called, is saying. That's what the emailer is saying, is you may have to move 10 to keep 40. Don't you want to do that?
I don't think that's the real choice here.
You think that's a false choice?
Yeah. So look at the other side of the ledger. When we're working, we're putting into the tax base, contributing to America, not taking from it. And the other piece that a lot of people forget about is we're known as the arsenal of democracy. We won World War II. We didn't have the better technology at that time. They say the Germans did. Their Panzer and Tiger tanks, the Zeros that the Japanese had, Mitsubishi Zeros that were killing American servicemen. People seem to forget about that little piece of history.
Oh, yeah.
But we were able to outproduce them and build more tanks, planes, weapon systems, and keep our troops supplied to grind them down and win the war and make the world free to expand democracy. The greatest generation they talk about, that was the auto industry, right? And what are we going to do now? Because China's flexing their muscles economically, military-wise, and when they come at it, and you know the two big boys on the block, at some point they always go at it. And when they do, we can't ask them to please hold off until I order my tanks and planes from you, China, who are taking us over, right? Well, you have to be smart about this. So, again, it's a matter of our national
security. You're not saying we're going to war
security.
With China, are you?
Look, I'm saying down the road, you never know what's possible. But if you don't have the ability to defend yourself, right? And that's what I thought at the federal level they were supposed to do, is bring us together, and defense of the nation is one of the top priorities along with the economic well-being. And so Trump, he's another guy who puffs up. We call him Barnum and Bailey. He's a con man in chief. We know it. So he's puffing up now, and I'm glad that he's putting tariffs on China. But will it last? Will he hold the line? Will he hold? If he does, he has a good chance of getting reelected, because middle America loves that. The working blue-collar folks has been demanding that, like Assemblyman Mark Johns has talked about. Let's take care of America first for once so we can take care of others. It's like the folks going into a burning building to save somebody, you know, and then he dies and the next guy dies.
So you think,
save yourself first.
You think if
right?
the president stays with his push for tariffs, he probably gets reelected?
From the folks on the floor, that's what we've been hearing. Right? If he, for once in his life, isn't lying and follows through, right? The renegotiation with NAFTA, with Mexico, that was all a con job, right? So who knows what's going on behind the scenes? He's the ultimate con man in chief, as we spoke about. If he ever held the line, and truly, it's like we're doing on this strike line, it's short-term pain for long-term gain. So yeah, you don't get the cheap stuff on the shelves of Walmart if you shut down China. But again, you build up American democracy and our sovereignty, our laws that we Americans put in place because of the moral and the right and the just thing to do.
But it would hurt for a little while.
Economically, you won't get those cheap trinkets at Walmart. You'll get solid, quality, American-made goods, and people will go to work and we'll build this economy the right way.
Let me read Colin. Colin says, if the argument is that for a company to stay viable, they have to chase the worst possible wages and benefits, then we need to stop saying that jobs are an answer to poverty. That is a race to the bottom by definition.
Correct.
Correct.
Okay. And back to the phone we go. This is Lydia from Rochester. Go ahead, Lydia.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
And solidarity to the rest of the people.
Solidarity.
The UAW.
Thank you.
Solidarity. Thank you.
Yeah. One thing I'd like to say, my name is Lydia, and I've been around for quite a while in social movements and what have you. And I'm a Filipino worker. And, you know, workers in the Philippines go all over the globe looking for jobs, and because the country is ridden in poverty. And therefore, you know, American corporations take advantage of that ever since the very beginning of the colonization of my country. So it's important that we understand that where the foreign workers are coming from. So unionism in the United States is really important, But we have to see the world as a way to solidarize, to have solidarity with the other workers who are also struggling for a living and who is also struggling to fight their bosses in their own backyard. And many times the U.S. corporations have really pushed, you know, unequal treaties to these countries. So first and foremost, I think today in the United States, we have a movement that's going on that's called social movement unionism, that we have to come together in every issues because they're so connected in our fight for our livelihood. And, you know, the corporation, no matter where they come from, whether they're from Japan or China or United States, the bottom line is they will go for the profit where the profit is the highest, and that's where they can get it from the backs of the workers.
Well, Lydia, thank you for the phone call.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. I mean, that's why, you know, most of us, are, and myself included, I've walked the picket line for the Fight for 15. All three of us in this room have done that many times, and it's been a lot of years since I've worked for $15 an hour, but it's not about me personally. It's about everybody together. And when we talk about that Fight for 15, it's not about just getting the guy that works at McDonald's or the lady who works at McDonald's $15 an hour. Another big part of that that people miss, it's for them to have the right to unionize. And that's what we need to do, is we need to increase the union membership in this country back to what it used to be, and that's what brings them to do the right thing. I know we're getting a little bit sidetracked on some of the trade laws and some of that. Right now, what we're really looking at, if General Motors could just take everything that they have in the U.S., make it in Mexico cheaper, they would do it tomorrow. But it's not just about being cheaper, it's also quality. And that's the big thing that keeps it here in New York, is the quality. But what they do is they try and manipulate it, and they keep on pushing at the union worker that we have to take less because they can put it in Mexico. They can put it in Mexico. That's their whole thing, to try and scare and intimidate us. And the reason why we're on strike right now is because I'm going to stop you now while I have the power. Right now we have the power because it's all of us, General Motors. If we wait till they have almost everything in Mexico, then it's too late. We have to stop
on that point.
Yeah, just briefly. Right? Go ahead.
Yeah. So we're in this to win it, but we're in it in solidarity with other unions. And it was amazing to see the Teamsters come on board right away. They're not shipping any General Motors finished goods. I heard the rail workers came on board yesterday. The steel workers won't deliver to GM plants. They know that we're on the front of this battle line against corporate greed, but tomorrow it's them if we don't win this fight. So we are, and it's for the community. It's for all the workers. The mayor, to her credit, walked the strike line with us this morning, Evan.
Yeah, we had a couple folks last night. They stopped, and they wanted to know how they get a union in their place, their place of business. One of the places is right up the road. I'm not going to name the place because I don't, you know, I'm going to do what we can to see if we can't get them some
help.
Union help. And, you know, I told them, you know, the real brief, what I could do 5 minutes on the side of the road while we're walking with picket signs, of what he needs to do and the steps he needs to take to get a union. And I think what's happening in this country is everybody's getting on board and they're realizing what's happening. I mean, we don't have any cars that are driving by, you know, telling us to get jobs or get back to work. They all support us because in their jobs, they're going through the same exact thing.
Same struggle.
So briefly, Jocelyn, you mentioned health care as a matter for you in particular.
Yes.
Alex writes to say both GM and Ford moved plants to Ontario due to health care there. What do your guests think of universal health care? Wouldn't that take a huge issue off the table? Why isn't GM fighting for universal health care? Do you agree with that?
Well,
Our official stance is yes.
Yes,
with the UAW.
I do agree with that. We all need health care. That's a major, major issue for everyone, you know. So we can't just, we're fighting this battle for everyone. So it is universal.
And Dan, to kind of close here, you know, as we look to the next election, just 30 seconds here.
Sure.
People were surprised to see that Trump won the union vote in Ohio. They thought that was unheard of. Mm-hmm. Do you think that these kinds of issues, the factory floor issues, tariffs and more, are going to swing the election one way or another?
I do. They feel backstabbed in Ohio. They know they were lied to. Again, the con man in chief at his best. So he was talking, and he's in meetings with Mary Barra. But I said it on an interview the other night. Behind closed door, he's probably patting her on the back saying, good job. So I would love to see him actually do something to bring jobs back. I haven't seen it yet.
He's saying the right thing. Now he's got to do the right thing.
And he can still win votes like yours if he does it.
If he does the right thing, yes.
And so you hear Chris here in Rochester. Now you think about Minnesota, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Ohio. This election is still wide open, and it is lunch pail issues like this one. I want to thank our guests for being here, and you're going to see them on the picket line for, I guess they say, as long as it takes, Dan Maloney.
One day longer, one day stronger.
Dan Maloney is the president of UAW Local 1097. Chris Brancato, Jocelyn James, thanks to both of you for your time as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Alrighty, thank you. And folks can come down and carry a picket sign. That's the best way to help.
Bring your kids, bring your families, bring everyone.
Bring the dog.
We love the support.
Yep.
More connections coming up next.